The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Well, so I've heard several no's, so I asked those who support the motion to rise in their place pursuant to rule number 43-7. As more than 10 members have risen, the member has leave to under rule 43-8, and this debate will take place today at the moment of interruption as provided under rule 43-11. Okay, now let's get back to orders of the day. Oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 2:47. We will finish at 3:47, and I will recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier and the NDP are blindly championing a multi-billion-dollar maritime link project when they can't even tell Nova Scotians what it will mean to their power bills. Mr. Speaker, make no mistake, the Maritime Link will increase rates for Nova Scotians and their families. Over the last 4 years, the energy policies of the NDP government have seen Nova Scotia Power raise their bills by more than 30%, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier, will the Premier tell Nova Scotians what this multi-billion dollar project will mean to their power bills?
Honourable the Premier.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I most certainly will. What this will mean is stable, secure energy for our region for decades to come, Mr. Speaker. It means, Mr. Speaker, that the energy policy of this province will be local, reliable, secure, and tax-free, something that the opposition party is opposed to.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the only thing that is clear is that Emera will make $1 billion over the life of this project, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we know it'll be Nova Scotia ratepayers that end up paying that bill, Mr. Speaker. Even the province of Newfoundland is toting the fact that ratepayers in Nova Scotia are going to pay for their energy project, Mr. Speaker. This is not the Premier's plan, though, Mr. Speaker. This is Nova Scotia Power's plan. It is clear that Nova Scotia Power is dictating energy policy for our province and not the NDP government. So my question to the Premier, why is the Premier so willing to allow Nova Scotia Power to set energy policy for this province?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I remember a time when the Leader of the Opposition was busy flying to Newfoundland to meet with the Premier of Newfoundland to tell him, man, I am on board with this. I can't wait to see a regional energy policy in this country, Mr. Speaker. The reality is that it took this government actually working with Newfoundland and Labrador and with New Brunswick in order to be able to establish a project that was going to be lowest cost, that was going to be reliable, secure, local, and of course tax-free. Now, for some reason, the Leader of the Opposition opposes all of these things.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Leader of the Opposition believes in protecting ratepayers. The Leader of the Government of this province believes looking after shareholders for America, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, like everyone else that comes into this province, Mr. Speaker, they see the Premier coming and they fleece him, Mr. Speaker. And that's what happened. Ameris had an opportunity, Mr. Speaker, to dig into the pockets of ratepayers for more than $1 billion while our Premier sits idly by, Mr. Speaker. No, he doesn't, Mr. Speaker. He goes around and promotes the projects and the benefit of shareholders at the risk of ratepayers. Mr. Speaker, how can Nova Scotians trust a Premier to deliver affordable, clean energy to this province via the Maritime Link when he won't even tell Nova Scotians how much that energy will cost? How can the people of this province trust a government that intentionally misleads the House of Assembly and all Nova Scotians when it failed to disclose
the revenue? Order, please. That is unparliamentary with the word intentionally misleading.
I'll take the word intentionally, Mr. Speaker, but I will say this. How can the people of this province trust a government that misled the House of Assembly and all Nova Scotians when it failed to disclose revenue overstatements by $27 million, Mr. Speaker? How can the people trust the NDP government that raised taxes after promising not to cut funding to public education and social programs, Mr. Speaker? How can ratepayers, Mr. Speaker, trust this government will protect them against Nova Scotia power when they have failed at every turn, Mr. Speaker?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, this government has delivered on virtually every promise that we have made, Mr. Speaker. We are delivering better care sooner to the people of Nova Scotia, and we will deliver the most affordable, fairest, lowest energy rates for Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians got a reminder of the NDP cash grab this weekend when the Nova Scotia Liquor Corporation overcharged them on Saturday, March the 30th, two full days before they were allowed to raise prices. They had one price on the shelves and another price at the cash register, Mr. Speaker, on top of the HST, on top of the user fee increases, on top of all the other NDP cash grabs. This is very frustrating for Nova Scotians and unfair. So I will ask the Premier, just how many hands can the NDP put into the pockets of Nova Scotians at the same time?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I understand on the weekend there was a problem with the computers at the liquor store where they did overcharge on some products. They made the price adjustments that were supposed to come along later, a day earlier than they should have, and that meant that on some products people paid less, Mr. Speaker. That's not a cash grab, Mr. Speaker. A cash grab would be putting the HST on energy prices right across the province for every family, Mr. Speaker. That's what the Tories did, and that's what a cash grab looks like.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier has obviously bought the line of his Crown Corporation that it was a computer glitch. But it's funny how those computer glitches under the NDP always cost Nova Scotians more, Mr. Speaker. One can only imagine what would have happened if the glitch had cost them less. It would have been fixed on the spot. But, Mr. Speaker, someone over there decided to let it go and charge Nova Scotians more. This is the same, Mr. Speaker, it's the same Crown Corporation that under their direction tried to put out of business those small independent U-Vents and home brewing companies. And Mr. Speaker, the fact is Nova Scotians were overcharged again by the NDP. My question, Mr. Speaker, will the Premier apologize to the people who were overcharged and assure them that they can get their money back?
Honourable the Premier.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I'm in charge of a lot of things these days, but, ensuring that the computers at the liquor store work correctly, I don't think that's my responsibility. I think that's the responsibility of the Liquor Commission, just to simply make their things work appropriately. He's right. Some people were overcharged. Some people were undercharged. The Liquor Commission agreed to refund anyone who was inadvertently overcharged. Mr. Speaker, that's not a cash grab. Putting the HST on home energy of every family, that's a cash grab. Putting up PharmaCare fees by $4.5 million like the former Conservative government did, that's a cash grab.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, raising the HST on virtually every item that people buy by 2%, charging the average Nova Scotian over $1,000 in extra HST under their administration, that is the mother of all cash grabs. The mother of all cash grabs, raising 1,400 user fees by 6% when people's incomes are not going up. That, Mr. Speaker, is the mother of all cash grabs, and allowing a Crown corporation under the control of this government to overcharge people and knowingly do it and do nothing about it, that also is a cash grab, Mr. Speaker. So I will ask the Premier, will he conduct a full investigation of what went wrong on Saturday and report back so all Nova Scotians can make up their own minds who the real cash grabber is?
The Honourable the Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, there's a lot of things that we should probably be making inquiries into. This is not one of them, Mr. Speaker. As I pointed out, the Liquor Commission noticed the error. They refunded for the people who requested for refunds. They didn't ask anyone who was undercharged to pay an additional fee, Mr. Speaker. But you know something, Mr. Speaker? The real cash grab would be putting the HST on home energy. It would be raising PharmaCare fees by $4.5 million. It would be raising an ambulance fee from $100 to $600. That is what the former Conservative government did, Mr. Speaker. And that is the anatomy of a cash grab.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Speaker, the rising cost of power, Mr. Speaker, has put a squeeze on Nova Scotia families and Nova Scotia businesses, Mr. Speaker. Businesses have cited high power costs as their main concern in the past few years, and the expected increase in rates will continue to add more and more pressure, Mr. Speaker, on their bottom line. Meanwhile, Nova Scotia families are struggling with a 30% increase over the last 4 years under the NDP government. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia has consistently had some of the highest power rates in the country. So why is the Premier adopting the Nova Scotia power strategy on rates and abandoning Nova Scotians?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I know it's been a long time since Liberals been in power, but let's just cast our minds back. It was the last Liberal government that actually created AMERA. It's the one that brought forward the legislation to establish it in the first place. It was Liberal governments in the 1960s and 1970s, Mr. Speaker, who established the strategy for Nova Scotia that led us into fossil fuel-burning power generation, Mr. Speaker. It is the mistakes of the past made by former Liberal and, frankly, former Conservative governments that have led to the energy situation of today. Mr. Speaker, when we came in on June 9, 2009, we would have loved to have been able to fix all those problems immediately. The problem, of Mr. Speaker, is you can't. The fact of the matter is it takes a strategy over a lot of years, Mr. Speaker, and a lot of years to fix the mistakes made by Liberals and Conservatives.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, unfortunately, it's Nova Scotians who are living under the mistakes of the NDP government over the last 4 years, Mr. Speaker, that have caused energy prices to increase 30%, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Stats Canada data shows that under the NDP government, rates have risen by more than 30%. Mr. Speaker, I might add the largest increase in the entire country. Wow. Mr. Speaker, this rapid increase is directly tied to the Premier's inability to stabilize rates. It's quite obvious, Mr. Speaker, that his policy hasn't worked. Mr. Speaker, if the Premier can't tell us how much his multi-billion dollar project will increase power rates, how can Nova Scotians trust any part of his ineffective energy plan?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the Maritime Link project has been thoroughly investigated. It has been vetted through a respected energy consultant that is before the board now. What they have said is not only will it stabilize energy prices, Mr. Speaker, with low increases over the first 4 years, that after that, Mr. Speaker, the actual cost of that energy will decline. Mr. Speaker. This is a good deal. This is a good deal for ratepayers. It is a good deal for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. Unlike the policy of the opposition, which is to put the HST back on and increase everybody's rates by 10%.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, some of the highest rates in the country, an ineffective energy policy. The Premier sending out ministers and backbenchers across the province, toting a multi-billion dollar project that he can't even answer, Mr. Speaker, the simple question of how much it will cost Nova Scotia on their power bills. There's nothing that this Premier has done on the energy file that will give Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, any reason to trust him.
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, quite the contrary. The costs associated with the project have been filed with the Utility and Review Board. They are going to review the project. And you know, Mr. Speaker, the Leader of the Opposition, I know he's yelling now because he doesn't want to hear the answer, but the reality is the leader of the Opposition knows that when the Liberals were in power, in 1 year, Mr. Speaker, in 1 year, the cost of electricity went up by 47%.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
What year?
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park has the floor, please.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, 2 years ago, the NDP hiked over 1,400 user fees, and on Thursday, we learned that the NDP was hiking the same fees again. 2 years ago, the NDP hike was 2% on most of those fees, and this time it's 5.8% on the same fees. This means that since taking office in 2009, the NDP have hiked government user fees by nearly 8%. My question to the Minister, Mr. Speaker, is why is the Minister hiking user fees again, issuing an additional 6% across the board tax grab and further squeezing Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, no one likes it when prices have to increase, but the reality is that fees had not increased for a number of years, and in fact, the cost of delivering those services are going up. In addition, this is a year that this province will move back to a balanced budget. Something I'm very proud that we have been able to do, and we've been able to do it without putting tolls on the highway, without turning our schools over to the private sector to build and run like the P3 schools of the former Liberal government, Mr. Speaker. In fact, when it comes to user fees, Mr. Speaker, the Liberal Party invented user fees in this province.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, after years and years of demanding that the government of the day show proof to the NDP that these fee hikes in the past were based on cost recovery, suddenly the NDP government is in control and they've hiked fees twice now with no shred of evidence that these are actually cost recovery. No evidence whatsoever. This means that today, running a small business now, Mr. Speaker, is more expensive. Food handling courses are more expensive. There, no evidence on any of these, but we know that small business is going to be more expensive to run, that it's more expensive to get your teacher certification, to get proof of maintenance enforcement fees, to get apprenticeship training. All of these things have raised the cost of raising our families and living in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is, will the Finance Minister explain to Nova Scotians why she feels that she can hike user fees by 6% this year, while Nova Scotians' average weekly earnings are almost 12% lower than the national average?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I know that the Honourable Member is very concerned about the conditions under which small business operate in the province, and that's why this government has reduced the small business tax rate, and will reduce it again this year, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, that reduction has put $78 million into the pockets of small businesses in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, something that I'm very proud of, and so are members of this government, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it's interesting that the Minister would even touch the small business tax rate reduction for this year, given that she also monkeyed around with the threshold so that it's cost neutral to the government. You're not losing anything. Business is not gaining anything. It's cost neutral. So it's wonderful. It's no more than a talking point for the Chamber of Commerce while you maintain not telling them the other part of the equation, which is really duplicity, if you ask me, Mr. Speaker. And it's a bit galling that the minister would raise it today. Today, the question is around user fees and how they have not been justified with any evidence that this generally 5.8% increase is actually reflective of the cost of living increases and the cost of delivering those services. And that was a principle that the NDP really felt strongly about in opposition. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, why has the minister abandoned her past principles and why is she issuing yet another NDP tax grab?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as I indicated, one of the key commitments of this government is to return to a balanced budget. We will fulfill that commitment on Thursday, Mr. Speaker. Fees and the revenue that are generated from those fees contribute to good public services in this province, Mr. Speaker. The basis for the increase is based on the rate of inflation, which is a fair way to do this, Mr. Speaker. And I look forward to having debate with the Honourable Member about many of the good things that will be contained in our budget on Thursday.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, apparently the government believes impoverishing Nova Scotians is an accomplishment that they're going to try and take credit for on Thursday. Now we know that they have reached into the pockets of Nova Scotians, raising 1,400 user fees to gain another $11.6 million to throw into the government pot. Mr. Speaker, 121 pages of new fee increases. And among those increases is fees for home support, user fees, which are going up to $12.10 an hour. Well, the charge for canceling a home support visit goes up to $59.30 per occurrence. I ask the Premier, have the incomes of seniors who have to pay for these new fees gone up by 6% to match the increase, or is this just another NDP cash grab?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as the Minister of Finance said, the fees generally go up with the consumer price index. Mr. Speaker, I just remind, you know, it does take a lot of gumption for the leader of the Conservative Party to stand up and criticize this government when it was the Conservative government that put up fees by $26.7 million in 1 year, Mr. Speaker, when they were in government.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, here's what takes a lot of gumption. Having the highest consumer prices in the country, driven by electricity, up 30% under his government, and then the Premier turning around and hiking user fees, saying it's because consumer prices are going up, when it's electricity that's driving that increase. Mr. Speaker, wouldn't it be better? Wouldn't it be better if the government actually considered the ability of Nova Scotians to pay for once instead of relying on that old story about consumer prices, which they themselves are driving up? Mr. Speaker, here we have this great opportunity with the shipyard contract and thousands of Nova Scotians that are going to need training and apprenticeship opportunities. And do you know what 18 of those 1,400 fees relate to? Apprenticeship training fees, Mr. Speaker. They're raising 18 of them. So I'll ask the Premier, how does raising the fees
for apprenticeship training help young people in Nova Scotia, or is it simply just another NDP cash grab?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, last year we returned almost $70 million through the affordability tax credit to people who need it the most. We took the HST off of home energy, bringing down energy rates by 10%. Contrast that with what the Conservatives did when they were in power. They put up ambulance fees, they put up the PharmaCare copay, they put in place additional fees for home support. Speaker, and they have the nerve to point to something like fees going up at the cost of inflation as somehow a cash grab. No, Mr. Speaker, when it came to experts in cash grabs, in taking money out of the pockets of ordinary Nova Scotians, and particularly in punishing those who are worst off on our society, Mr. Speaker, no, not this government, Mr. Speaker, the Conservative government that thankfully is no more.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, speaking of ambulance fees, something that the Premier seems spoke against when he was in opposition, it should be noted that on page 27 of the 121 pages of fee increases that his government has approved are fees for ambulances. Fees for regular ambulance services are going up to $142.30. The fees for residents of long-term care facilities for the use of ambulance going up to $52.90. The fees for mobility-challenged Nova Scotians, those that need transportation help, are going up to $105.80. Unrelated in any way to the ability of Nova Scotians to pay. Mr. Speaker, for those that do have to pay those fees, that is a real hardship. And so I'll ask the Premier, are long-term care residents and mobility-challenged Nova Scotians able to absorb another 5.8% increase under his government, or is this just another NDP cash grab?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, every now and then a question gets asked that just makes you go, huh? Because the ambulance fees charged for people in long-term care fees were put up by the Conservative government to $134, Mr. Speaker. It was this government that brought it down to $50 so that it would be more affordable. It is this government, Mr. Speaker, that has a program for low-income Nova Scotians so that they don't end up paying ambulance fees. It was that government, the Conservative government, that decided to reach into the hands, to put their hands in the pockets of the elderly, of those who most needed it, almost consistently. It was the Conservatives who perfected the process of robbing seniors when they went into long-term care facilities of every cent that they had until they were at complete poverty, Mr. Speaker. It was the Conservatives who shook down every senior who went into long-term care for health care that anywhere else they would receive for free. That was the Conservative government, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, on Thursday I asked the Finance Minister whether or not she was going to continue the practice of prepaying universities in a year where the funds do not belong. The Minister's comments were of little comfort. She said, it doesn't really make any difference. The quote is exactly that. Well, Mr. Speaker, it certainly does make a difference. By moving payments around, it allows the NDP to present budgets which are less than accurate. And we already know that the NDP failed to disclose a revenue overstatement in last year's budget. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Finance Minister is, will the Minister state clearly whether or not there will be an expenditure entry made in a fiscal year for which they are not scheduled with regard to university payments?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as I've already indicated, I'm very much looking forward to Thursday when we will table a balanced budget in the province of Nova Scotia, a very important day for our province. It will be a day when this province will be turning and moving forward, Mr. Speaker, and turning a page, Mr. Speaker, from the mismanagement and the bad financial planning of the previous Conservative government, and bring us back to some financial sanity, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, back in 2009, the NDP university prepayment meant that the following year they were able to show expenditures at a much lower level than the scheduled MOU would have required. Now, Mr. Speaker, last year the NDP failed to disclose a $27 million overstatement in the estimates. And every year the NDP budget shows employment and operational expenditures inflated to be much higher than the actuals reported later. If the finance minister is going to report any payment to universities in a year prior to this coming fiscal year, it will allow them to perpetuate this fiscal fantasy. Mr. Speaker, my question is, will the minister tell Nova Scotians if there have been any prepayments to universities in this fiscal year?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as I already indicated, I'm looking forward to tabling the budget on Thursday. The details of the budget will be available at that time. They will not be available before that time. I know it is driving the members of the Liberal caucus absolutely crazy that this government is going to be able to table a balanced budget, Mr. Speaker. And there won't be these funds that we saw in the last Liberal budget tabled in this province when they set up that ridiculous fund for health care that exceeded $200 million off the books, Mr. Speaker, with a payment schedule that would only this year be finalized in terms of returning money to the province of Nova Scotia. There'll be none of that, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Deputy Premier. It's no secret that this NDP government has no respect for the Auditor General. In January of 2012, the Auditor General pointed out that running up the province's deficit, the debt, was unethical. To that, the member for Halifax-Chibucto said, "Very interesting. Who asked you?" Earlier this year, the Auditor General unveiled a $27 million budget cover-up. The media reports say the Treasury Board denied a budget increase to the Auditor.
The word cover-up is unparliamentary on many occasions. I'd ask the Honourable Member to retract the word, please.
Thank you for that correction, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, the media reports now say the Treasury Board denied a budget increase to the Auditor General's office that has been approved by the All-Party Management Committee. So my question is, will the Deputy Premier explain why the Auditor General's office will be denied a budget increase despite all parties making the recommendation?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I would think that the Auditor General would chastise me if I was to discuss budgets of various departments before they're even tabled in this House. So I don't know what the member's talking about, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his first supplementary.
Well, he's consistent. He doesn't understand anything.
Mr. Speaker,
the Auditor General should be applauded for revealing the NDP budget trickery, not punished. But the Treasury Board is denying the Auditor General's office a 2.3% raise that an all-party committee voted for. The Deputy Premier is a member of Management Board, and he's the chair of the Treasury Board.
I can't hear you.
Mr. Speaker, is this budget denial retaliation for the Auditor General's uncovering of the NDP's budget trickery, or is it just a strange coincidence?
Order, please. Trickery is an unparliamentary word. Again, I remind the Honourable Member that retract the word trickery, please.
Mr. Speaker, I apologize for that. And I would ask again, is this budget denial retaliation for the Auditor General's uncovering of the NDP's shell game, or is it just a coincidence?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the member, through you, Mr. Speaker, what we put together at Treasury Board, Department of Finance, is a balanced budget, Mr. Speaker, to which all Nova Scotians will be happy to see. That's what this is, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The honourable member for Cape Breton West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotians can't trust this government to tell them the truth. The $27 million trickery, cover-up, is proof. Order. Then this government...
I reminded the honourable member early in that question on unparliamentary language, so I would remind the honourable member to please retract that word when he stands on his feet. Thank you.
With pleasure, Mr. Speaker, I retract that word. I don't want to say it again. This government's member mocked the Attorney General for doing his job. Media reports that the Deputy Premier is now denying the Auditor General's office for the recommended raise. The Auditor General says he will be forced to cut staff and do fewer audits. If the NDP have any more $27 million mistakes planned, fewer audits must sound nice to them. So, Mr. Speaker, my question is, what justification does the Deputy Premier have for overruling the express will of Management Committee, and what other decisions of Management Committee does he intend to overturn?
The Honourable, the Deputy Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm answer that the same way I answered the last question, that we on Thursday will bring a balanced budget to this House for all Nova Scotians to have so we can move forward, Mr. Speaker, not like the former party, Mr. Speaker, that saddled us with generations of debt, Mr. Speaker, or may I say, Mr. Speaker, they're federal cousins that are cutting and slashing federal jobs in Cape Breton, Mr. Speaker, when you see jobs lost at Parks Canada, when you see Service Canada, when you see veterans being affected, Mr. Speaker, we want to do stuff like that. We'll stand up and fight it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. The Speaker has consistently ruled that language used in the House should be tempered and worthy of a place in which it is spoken. No language is, by virtue of any list, acceptable or unacceptable. A word which is parliamentary in one context may cause disorder in another and therefore be unparliamentary. So I just remind all the honourable members to please take that in notice. Thank you. The honourable member for Dartmouth East on his question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Chair of the Treasury Board. Following on the same theme, the Minister may not wish to discuss what's coming in the upcoming budget, but perhaps he will recall sitting across from myself and sitting next to his colleagues, and the motion moved by the member for Lunenburg, and I will table that, which approved the Auditor General's budget request with no freeze and, in fact, an $83,000 increase. The member sat across from us and raised no objections, and, in fact, he did not vote against it. So, Mr. Speaker, would the Chair of the Treasury Board like to tell the House whether he agrees with that motion, which he did not vote against?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, one thing I want to is like the member opposite, is like all of a sudden tell people after a vote was taken in the management committee meeting, say, well, I didn't vote for it. Mr. Speaker, what we've did, we considered it at Treasury Board, and we acted accordingly. Thank you.
The honourable member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I guess that means he voted for it, which is the minutes don't show who voted for or against it, but there you go. Mr. Speaker, the Commission had three options to look, and the NDP caucus moved the motion that would prevent cutbacks in that office. The chair of the Treasury Board had every opportunity to raise any concerns. He raised none. He didn't even say that might be an issue. He did not give the Commission the opportunity to discuss the issue. It would seem that just as the minister did not inform Cabinet about a $27 million budget error he knew about last year as chair of the Treasury Board, he also decided not to inform the Management Commission members that he would not ultimately support the motion moved by his own caucus colleagues. Mr. Speaker, is the Deputy Premier just trying to get back at the Auditor General for embarrassing him?
The Honourable the Deputy Premier.
I've heard that question before, but Mr. Speaker, and it was done more eloquently. Mr. Speaker, the reality, Mr. Speaker, is that as we've said before, that things are brought to Treasury Board. We look at them. We bring them forward. We're bringing forward a balanced budget, Mr. Speaker, and we're bringing Nova Scotians forward. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, there are a few Nova Scotians who would say the Auditor General has not provided a valuable service to Nova Scotians, especially in recent years, pointing out where the government should be making changes to save taxpayers' money. So, Mr. Speaker, does the Deputy Premier believe that the Auditor General's office is spending taxpayer dollars frivolously?
The Deputy Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, at least that was a little bit different. I would say earlier, in his earlier question, might have been impugning motive, Mr. Speaker. But I'll say this, Mr. Speaker. Every department's looked at during budget and Treasury Board time, Mr. Speaker. That's the reality. If it was done that way when the Liberals were in power, we wouldn't have probably inherited such a mess, Mr. Speaker. But that was the reality. But what we're trying to do, Mr. Speaker, is look at this budget line by line and figure what's going on, whichever department it is, Mr. Speaker, and we give them all fair consideration, whatever that may be. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Last week, members of this House witnessed the Minister of Community Services break a sacred trust she had with clients of her department when she disclosed a name and private information about a young woman in her department's care on the floor of this legislature. The information about the woman's status was not in the public domain, and when her department published unfounded allegations about a priest last April, the minister said that she was in the clear because the report did not indicate any individual's name, and I'll table Hansard in which she said that. So, this time, she did indicate the individual's name 8 times, Mr. Speaker. Will the Minister of Community Services admit today that she made a serious error in repeating the name of a client or a department 8 times when answering a question last week?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, the member opposite knows that you, as the Speaker, ruled on that. Thank you, and he knows the answer.
The Honourable Minister... The Honourable... Member for Argyle.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, even though I do accept your ruling, there were some further issues on this one that in her duty as, of course, minister, that she should be talking to the chair of course, Executive Council, which is, of course, the Premier. But, Mr. Speaker, unfortunately, the woman's name was not only thing that she disclosed last week. Contrary to every convention in this House and privacy law, that Nova Scotians expect members of Cabinet to uphold, this minister told members of this House and everyone watching and listening at home about details of a young woman's behavior, her progress, and related to safety of an unnamed third party. So will the Minister of Community Services admit that she would have done her job more completely or competently had she offered to discuss the details of this young woman's case with the member for Bedford Birch Cove in private?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as the member opposite knows, you ruled on that. He knows the answer, and I would ask him to get off his political soapbox.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, she knows full well also that the Speaker's ruling, that your ruling, was such that she did not breach the convention of this House. But, Mr. Speaker, she did breach an issue when it comes to the confidentiality and the privacy of members and citizens of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, most shockingly and disappointing, the breach of privacy that the Minister of Community Services committed last week was to discuss the competency status of a client of her department in public right here on the floor of the legislature. That's something that she should take on and admit to that she did wrong in this House. Maybe if she just admitted it, would be a step forward in this, Mr. Speaker. The only person's competency that should be rightly discussed in this legislature is the Minister of Community Services. So since she can't answer the question, she is falling under the chapeau here. I'm going to ask maybe the Premier, who is the Chair of the Executive Council, will you be asking maybe for her to at least apologize to the member, to the citizen that the name was brought forward in this House, or will you be asking for her resignation finally for her incompetencies?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, what I saw transpire in this House, and I had an opportunity to listen carefully both to the question and to the answer, and I realized, in fact, that the asker of the question that says that these kinds of questions actually distract from the issue, and I have to say I don't wholly disagree with that. But what I heard was the question and an answer, both of which were compassionate about the situation, about the individuals who were involved, that were sincere, and I don't believe that either party was engaged in attempting to take political advantage of that individual. I believe they were attempting to ask and give information that was sincere. I think that is the job, not only of the MLA, but also the job of the Cabinet Minister.
The Honourable Member for Bedford-Birch Cove.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there are 10,000 people across Nova Scotia living with autism. Many of their families are concerned about housing options as their children reach adulthood. Sadly, when the time comes to find appropriate community-based housing, there is none. Can the Minister for Community Services please tell members of this House how many people are waiting to get into supportive community-based homes at this time?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, what I can tell the Honourable Member, the reason why we're in the position we are today is because both parties, the Liberals and the Conservatives, never ever strategized or planned with respect to persons with intellectual disabilities. You have to plant a seed, you have to water it to make it grow. And decisions of the past, Mr. Speaker, affects what happens today and in the future. That is no different than in our personal lives. It's no different in government. If they would have cared back then when they were making those decisions, we would not be in the position we are in today. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Bedford-Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the Minister for the horticultural lesson. Mr. Speaker, in 2011, the Community Homes Action Group reported to the Community Services Committee that there are 650 people on a wait list for residential services. This isn't 650 people. This is an urgent crisis that deserves urgent action. The Center for Disease Control shows that in 2001, the prevalence of autism spectrum disorders was 1 in 150. Now, it's 1 in 88. The need is increasing, the wait lists are increasing, and still the minister is giving us gardening tips. Will the minister, at the very least, tell members of this House if she recognizes that this is indeed a crisis?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I certainly am aware of the situation that we're in today. As I said, unfortunately, because of a lack of planning and strategy, strategizing in the past. But I can tell you that this is the first government that has made a commitment to move towards community options. We are the first government who is developing a housing strategy. So we do not just speak words, we take action, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford-Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's been 4 years. Nova Scotians, they had such high hopes for this NDP government, and they had such high hopes that this minister and her government would not wait 4 years to act, let alone sit on a wait list of 650 people in need of community-based housing. At a recent public consultation on housing for people with disabilities, the 120 attendees were very clear they wanted to see immediate action. Mr. Speaker, families and people living with autism and other disabilities want to know, when is the minister going to move past vision statements and horticultural tips and finally address this wait list?
The Honourable Minister of Community Service.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member may be talking about 4 years, 4 years of bringing advocates together, 4 years of planning, 4 years of strategizing and going around this province, talking to people, consulting. I know they don't believe in consulting, but you know how many years they had, the two parties over there? 250 years, and they did nothing.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Education. Mr. Speaker, last year school boards were asked to submit provincial student services surveys to the Department of Education. And on those surveys, they outlined the number of students accessing direct student service and supports. The information was sent to the minister, and it also showed that a number of students who were referred, but they were still waiting for service. This list showed students waiting for access to school psychologists and to speech-language pathologists. So my question to the minister is this. Can the minister please tell members of this House when she received that information?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This government recognizes that children in our school system need the supports of school psychologists and speech pathologists. And it was very interesting to note that I did go back and look at our supposed wait lists that were reported last week by the member opposite, and to find out that this province actually is far ahead of every other province in Canada, that children on a list for an appointment, it takes about 6 to 8 months to access service in this province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I did table those surveys. I am pleased that the minister did look at them, but I am concerned that nothing has been done to respond to those. The school board submitted that information last year at the end of June, and the surveys showed that there were up to 2,000 students waiting for access to school psychologists and speech-language pathologists. There were 650 students alone in elementary school who are waiting for that access. Mr. Speaker, people living with autism have been the first to tell us that communication deficits and the need for support by professionals is how you address their initial needs. So will the minister tell the children, the parents of those children who suffer from autism, whether she considered those wait lists when she started slashing to 5 school boards already this year?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to say that we have looked at the situation of children in our province with autism, and under the former government, there was a lottery in place for them to get early intervention. This government has ensured that we have the funding and the availability for every child that's diagnosed with autism or autism spectrum disorder to have their early intervention. Every child has the opportunity under this government. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Well, my question, Mr. Speaker, would be, if this government is ensuring that every student with autism has access, then can the minister tell me why there are still 2,000 on a wait list?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. And I guess that we'll need to discuss the term waitlist, because when you make a doctor's appointment, you get an appointment, and I don't consider getting an appointment being on a waitlist. There are 400 schools across our province, and there are a number of students waiting to receive the supports of a school psychologist or a speech pathologist. So they're not, it's not a 2,000 student waitlist. What we are looking at is that there are a number of students waiting to have their appointment
appointments, the same as in our private lives. If we are wanting a specialist appointment, you get an appointment, and there is a time period to make sure that every child that needs service in this province will get their service in a timely manner. Every child in this province that is diagnosed with autism before they come to school have the ability to have the early intervention. Under this government, every child, not a lottery system. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. Prior to the recent increases in user fees, the biannual cost to renew a license plate was over $200. So a Nova Scotia needs a new sticker for their plate must pay over $100 each year to be legal. Can the Minister tell us what the actual cost is for the sticker, the postage to mail it, and the keystrokes needed to update the information in the provincial database?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as I indicated earlier, you know, Mr. Speaker, nobody likes when prices go up on anything, Mr. Speaker, and I'm no different than anyone else. I'm true to my Scottish heritage in that regard. However, I do recognize that the cost of providing services, public services, do go up. And fees, user fees in the province of Nova Scotia had not gone up for a couple of years, Mr. Speaker. And for that reason, we did increase fees. This is a year that the government will be tabling a balanced budget, and departments do not have the capacity to absorb increasing costs of providing many of these services because they have been working very hard to work within the envelope that they've been given annually.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I must stand up for my people. I know them to only be the most hospitable of people, and they're not cheap. But, Mr. Speaker, the fee to renew a plate, in my mind, is absurd. And it leads me to ask the Minister the question, are these fees designed to cover the cost of plate renewal in the most affordable way for Nova Scotians, or are they needed to pay for her expensive NDP government?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in the process of increasing the fees, there were a number of fees that we did look at and we did protect from any increases, Mr. Speaker. But indeed, there are many fees for many different services, and quite often these fees, in fact, come nowhere close to covering the actual costs of providing the services. They are a small portion. They are really a token of the actual costs of many services. But we do attempt to look at the administrative costs associated with services. So, indeed, the fee increases have been made, and they will allow for those important services to continue to be provided at reasonable rates for the people in the province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Minister says that the fee actually only covers a fraction of the cost, but shouldn't we know what the cost is? Isn't that the job of government to understand that? And shouldn't government also be figuring out how to deliver services more affordably? That's what we heard from this government. But I'll tell you, Mr. Speaker, I'm going to table a couple of things here. One was a promise not to raise taxes. That was made by the Premier in the television debate during the 2009 election. We know that that wasn't held because we saw HST increase. We also know we've got a budget coming up here on Thursday, Mr. Speaker, and we know that the Auditor General has poured cold water onto this idea that the government was in a structural deficit. So, Mr. Speaker, you know, had they really been in a structural deficit, they'd still be in it. But we're here, we're going to have a balanced budget. So my point, Mr. Speaker, is this government should be doing something to make life affordable for Nova Scotians. So my question for the Minister, why do you choose an expensive user fee that is obviously much higher than the cost to mail a sticker to somebody to deliver the service when you promise your government would offer people more affordable lifestyles.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is a government that does care about people and the affordability of things that are basic necessities, Mr. Speaker. Things like home heat and electricity. And that's why the very first thing this government did when we came into power was to remove the HST that crowd over there had put on energy with the support of the Liberal caucus, Mr. Speaker. We believe in affordability, and Mr. Speaker, that's why we took the HST off home energy, and that's why we're committed to ensuring it stays off home energy, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sure the Minister of Health can inform the Minister of Education about wait lists because he's got some big ones, some up to 8 to 10 years. Now, Mr. Speaker, today is World Autism Day, so in light of this fact, could the Minister of Health and Wellness tell us how long does a child wait for their appointment to be assessed by the IWK autism team?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm very proud of our accomplishment over the last 3.5 years around autism here in Nova Scotia. We knew of a system, Mr. Speaker, that used to have a lottery to allow young people to be assessed and enter a program for autism, Mr. Speaker. I think the system we have in place today has come a long way since the former government was in power, Mr. Speaker, and we're going to continue to work to ensure that our young people, especially our youth, get assessed and get into the treatments that they need, especially for autism here in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, parents are telling us as recently as today to wait to see the autism team at the IWK is anywhere from 9 months to 1 year. So while the government talks about no longer having a lottery system for EIBI, there are still significant challenges when it comes to an actual diagnosis. In fact, some children age out, enter the school system, are finally diagnosed in the school system, only to go on a wait list for special needs in the school system. Children with autism are on a perpetual wait list. Could the minister please indicate that if a child is lucky enough to receive a diagnosis prior to going to school, how long does it then take to receive EIBI?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Here we go again. The Liberal Party misleading Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. They should be ashamed of themselves. Ashamed of yourself. Every single child, Mr. Speaker, in Nova Scotia who needs to get this EIBI program before they go to school will get it. That's a change from the practice of the past, Mr. Speaker. I'm very proud of the accomplishments that we've managed here in Nova Scotia in our government over the last 4 years, but it's typical of the Liberals, Mr. Speaker. Just say whatever. Doesn't matter if it's true or not, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I will listen to parents from this province over this minister any day of the week. I will take my lead from parents in this province who are on wait lists at the IWK. My final question to the minister. Could the minister please indicate what they are doing to address the cascading wait for assessments and then EIBI?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
And, Mr. Speaker, the Liberals will say anything, but they don't have any solutions, Mr. Speaker. Every child in Nova Scotia who needs to gain access to the EIBI program gains access, Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. The time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. The Honourable Member for Halifax Atlantic.
Speaker, and I rise today on a point of privilege, which I have given you notice. This is not actually the first time that I've almost needed to rise on a point of privilege during my 3 terms of office as representative for Halifax Atlantic, but I do hope it will be the last. My current term has been marked by a series of odd events which have seriously jeopardized my ability to function as a member by threatening significant personal consequences resulting from my position as an elected member. I was grateful for your assistance, Mr. Speaker, when in clear violation of sections 37B(c) and 39(1), the Department of Finance had withheld my subsistence for some 6 months, refusing to issue payment.